Samuel R. Delaney's The Star Pit, directed by Daniel Landau, with Randa Haines, Walter Harris, Jerry Matz, Joan Tanner, and Phoebe Ray. The narration is by the author. The music for The Star Pit is composed and performed by Susan Schwiers. The technical direction is by Ed Woodard and David Rapkin. Production assistant Neil Conan. The Star Pit first appeared in Worlds of Tomorrow, published by the Galaxy Publishing Corporation.
Glass panes, with dirt in between and little tunnels from cell to cell. When I was a kid, I had an ant colony. But once, some of our 4 to 6 year olds built in a collegiarium with 6 foot plastic panels and grooved aluminum bars to hold corners and top down. They put it out on the sand. There was a mud puddle against one wall so you could see what was going on underwater. Sometimes, segment worms crawling through the reddish earth hit the sides so their tunnels were visible for a few inches. In hot weather, the inside of the plastic got coated with mist and droplets. The small round leaves on the litmus vines changed from blue to pink, as clouds coursed the sky and the pH of the photosensitive soil shifted slightly. The kids would run out before dawn and belly down naked on the cool sand with their chins on the backs of their hands and stare in the half-dark till the red mill wheel of Sigma lifted over the bloody sea. The sand was maroon then, and the flowers of the crystal plants looked like rubies in the dim light of the giant sun. Up the beach, the jungle would start to whisper, while somewhere an anteater would start wobbling. The kids would giggle and poke each other and crowd closer. Then, Sigma Prime, the second member of the binary, would flare like thermite on the water, and crimson clouds would bleach from coral through peach to foam. The kids, half on top of each other, lay now like a pile of copper ingots with sun streaks in their hair, even on little Antony, my oldest, whose hair was black and curly like bubbling oil, like his mother's. The down on the small of his 2-year-old back was a white haze across the copper, if you looked that close to see. More children came to squat and lean on their knees or kneel with their noses an inch from the walls to watch like young magicians as things were born, grew, matured, and other things were born. Enchanted at their own construction, they stared at the miracles in their live museum. A small red seed lay camouflaged in the silt by the lake puddle. One evening, as white Sigma Prime left the sky violet, it broke open into a brown larva as long and of the same color as the first joint of Antony's thumb. It flipped and swirled in the mud a couple of days, then crawled to the first branch of the nearest crystal plant to hang exhausted, head down from the tip. The brown flesh hardened, thickened, grew black, shiny. Then, one morning, the children saw the onyx chrysalis crack, and by second dawn, there was an emerald-eyed flying lizard buzzing at the plastic panels. The speed haze creature budded at the corner for a few days, then settled at last to crawling around the broad leaves of the miniature shade palms. When the season grew cool, and there was the annual debate over whether the kids should put tunics on, they never stayed in them for more than 20 minutes anyway, the jewels of the crystal plant misted, their facets coarsened, and they fell like gravel. There were little 4-cup sloths, too, big as a 6-year-old's fist. Most of the time, they pressed their velvety bodies against the wall and stared longingly across the sand with their retractable eye clusters. Then two of them swelled for about 3 weeks. We thought at first it was some bloating infection, but one evening there were a couple of litters of white velvet balls half hidden by the low leaves of the shade palms. The parents were occupied now and didn't pine to get out. There was a rock half in and half out of the puddle, I remember, covered with what I'd always called mustard moss when I saw it in the wild. Once it put out a brush of white hairs, and one afternoon the children ran to collect all the adults they could drag over.
Oh, look there! Look!
The hairs had detached themselves and were walking around the water's edge, turning end over end along the soft soil. I had to leave for work in a few minutes and haul some spare drive parts out to Tau Ceti, but when I got back 5 days later, the hairs had taken root, thickened, and were already putting out the small, round leaves of litmus vines. Among the new shoots, lying on her back, claws curled over her wrinkled belly, eyes cataract like the foggy jewels of the crystal plant, she dropped her wings like cellophane days ago, was the flying lizard. Her pearl throat still pulsed, but as I watched, it stopped. Before she died, however, she had managed to deposit, nearly camouflaged in the silt by the puddle, a scattering of red seeds. I remember getting home from another job where I'd been doing the maintenance on the shuttle boats for a crew putting up a ring station to circle a planet that was itself circling Aldebaran. I was gone a long time on that one. When I left the landing complex and wandered out toward the tall weeds at the edge of the beach, I still didn't see anybody. Which was just as well, because the night before I'd put on a real winner with the crew to celebrate the completion of the station. That morning I'd taken a couple of more drinks at the landing bar to undo last night's damage. It never works. The swish of frond on frond was like clashed rasps. The sun on the sand reached out two fingers of pure glare and tried to gouge my eyes. I was glad the home compound was deserted, because the kids would have asked questions I didn't want to answer. The adults wouldn't say anything, which was harder to answer than questions. Then, down by the ecologerium, a child screeched, and screeched again. Then Antony came hurtling toward me, half running, half on all fours, and flung himself on my leg.
Oh, da, why, oh, why, da?
I kicked my boots off and shrugged my shirt back at the compound porch, but I still had my overalls on. Antony had two fists full of my pants leg and wouldn't let go. Hey, kid boy, what's the matter? When I finally got him on my shoulder, he butted his blubber-wet face against my collarbone.
Da, it's crazy, it's all crazy.
What's crazy, kid boy? Tell Da. Antony held my ear and cried while I walked down to the plastic enclosure. They put a small door in one wall and a two-number combination lock that was supposed to keep this sort of thing from happening. I guess Antony learned the combination from watching the older kids, or maybe he just figured it out. One of the young sloths had climbed out and wandered across the sand about 3 feet.
Sita, it crazy. It bit me. Bit me, da.
Sobs became sniffles as he showed me a puffy, bluish place on his wrist, centered on which was a tiny crescent of pinpricks. Then he pointed jerkily to the creature. It was shivering, and bloody froth sputtered from its lip flaps. All the while it was digging futilely at the sand with its clumsy cups, eyes retracted. Now it fell over, kicked, tried to right itself, breath going like a flutter valve. Can't take the heat. I reached down to pick it up. It snapped at me, and I jerked back. Sunstroke, kid boy. Yeah, it is crazy. Suddenly it opened its mouth wide, let out all its air, and didn't take in any more. It's all right now. Two more of the baby sloths were at the door, front cups over the sill, staring with bright, black eyes. I pushed them back with a piece of seashell and closed the door. Antony kept looking at the white fur ball on the sand.
I'm crazy now.
It's dead.
Dead because it went outside, da?
Mm-hmm.
I'm crazy?
He made a fist and ground something already soft and wet around his upper lip. I decided to change the subject, which was already too close to something I didn't like to think about. Who's been taking care of you anyway? You're a mess, kid boy. Let's go and fix up that arm. They shouldn't leave a fellow your age all by himself. We started back to the compound. Those bites infect easily, and this one was swelling.
Why it go crazy? Why it die when it go outside, da?
Can't take the light. We reached the jungle. There are animals that live in shadow most of the time. The plastic cuts out the ultraviolet rays, just like the leaves that shade them when they run loose in the jungle. Sigma Prime's high on ultraviolet. That's why you're so good-looking, kid boy. I think your ma told me their nervous systems are on the surface, all that fuzz. Under the ultraviolet, the enzymes break down so quickly that... Does all this mean anything to you?
Uh-uh.
He admired his bite while we walked.
Wouldn't it be nice, Da, if some of them could go outside, just a few?
That stopped me. There were sunspots on his blue-black hair. Franz reflected faint green on his brown cheek. He was grinning, little and wonderful. Something that had been anger in me a lot of times momentarily melted to raging tenderness, whirling about him like the dust in the light striking down at my shoulders, raging to protect my son. I don't know about that, kid boy.
Why not?
It might be pretty bad for the ones who had to stay inside. I mean, after a while.
Why?
I started walking again. Come on, let's fix your arm up and get you cleaned. I washed the wet stuff off his face and scraped the dry stuff from beneath it, which had been there at least 2 days. Then I got some antibiotic into him.
You smell funny, Dad.
Never mind how I smell. Let's go outside again. I put down a cup of black coffee too fast, and it and my hangover had a fight in my stomach. I tried to ignore it and do a little looking around, but I still couldn't find anybody. That got me mad. I mean, he's independent, sure, he's mine, but he's still only two. Back on the beach, we buried the dead sloth in the sand. Then I pointed out the new, glittering stalks of the tiny crystal plants. At the bottom of the pond, in the jellied mass of anywort eggs, you could see the tadpole forms quivering already. An orange-fringed shelf fungus had sprouted nearly 8 inches since it had been just a few black spores on a pile of dead leaves a few weeks back.
Grow up!
Anthony leaned nose and fists against the plastic.
Everything grow up and up.
That's right.
I grow.
You sure as hell do.
You grow?
Then he shook his head, twice. Once to say no, and the second time because he got such a kick from shaking his hair around. There was a lot of it.
You don't grow. You don't get any bigger. Why don't you grow?
I do too, just very slowly. Anthony turned around, leaned on the plastic, and moved one toe at a time in the sand. I can't do that. Watching me. You have to grow all the time. Not necessarily get bigger, but inside your head you have to grow, kid boy. For us human-type people, that's what's important. And that kind of growing never stops. At least it shouldn't. You can grow, kid boy, or you can die. That's the choice you've got, and it goes on all your life. He looked back over his shoulder.
Grow up. All the time. Even if they can't get out.
Yeah. And I was uncomfortable all over again. I started pulling off my overalls for something to do. Even if you can't get out. The rest got back that evening. They'd been on a group trip around the foot of the mountain. I did a little shouting to make sure my point got across about leaving Anthony alone. Didn't do much good. You know how these family arguments go.
He didn't want to come. We weren't going to force him.
So what? He's got to learn to do some things he doesn't want to do.
Like some other people I could mention.
Now look here.
It's a healthy group. Don't you want him to grow up healthy?
I'll be happy if he just grows up, period. No food, no medical facility.
The server was chock full of food. He knows how to use it.
Look, when I got home, the kid's arm was swollen all the way up to his elbow. And so on and so forth, with Anthony sitting in the middle, looking confused. When he got confused enough, he ended it all by announcing matter-of-factly.
That smelled funny when he came home.
Everyone got quiet. Then someone said,
Oh, Vine, you didn't come home that way again. I mean, in front of the children.
I said a couple of things I was sorry for later and stalked off down the beach on a 4-mile hike. Times I got home from work? The ecologarian? I guess I'm just leading up to this one. The particular job had taken me a hectic week to get. It was putting back together a battleship that was gutted somewhere off Oregai. Only when I got there, I found I'd already been laid off. That particular war was over. They're real quick now. So I scraped and lied and browned my way into a repair gang that was servicing a traveling replacement station. Generally had to humiliate myself to get the job, because every other drive mechanic from the battleship fiasco was after it too. Then I got canned the first day because I came to work smelling funny. It took me another week to hitch a ride back to Sigma. Didn't even have enough to pay passage. But I made a deal with a pilot. I'd do half the driving for him. We were an hour out, and I was at the controls when something I'd never heard of happening happened. We came this close to ramming another ship. Consider how much empty space there is. The chances are infinitesimal. And on top of that, every ship should be broadcasting an identification beam at all times. But this big, bulbous, keeler intergalactic slid by so close I could see her through the front viewport. Our inertia system went nuts. We jerked around in the stasis whirl from the Keeler. I slammed on the video intercom and shouted, "You great big stupid!" So mad and scared, I couldn't say anything else. The Golden piloting the ship stared at me from the view screen with mildly surprised annoyance. I remember, his face was just slightly more negroid than mine. Our little Serpentina couldn't hurt him, but had we been even 100 meters closer, we might have ionized. The other pilot came bellowing from behind the sleeper curtain and started cursing me out. Damn it, it was one of those... And I lost all the profanity I knew to my rage. Golden!
This far into Galactic Center? Come off it! They should be hanging out around the star pit!
It was a Keeler drive. It came right up in front of us! I stopped, because the control stick was shaking in my hand. You know the Serpentina colophon? They have it in the corner of the view screen and raised in plastic on the head of the control knobs of the ship. Well, it got pressed into the ham of my thumb so you could make it out for an hour. I was squeezing the control rod that tight. When he set me down, I went straight to the bar to cool off and got in a fight. When I reached the beach, I was broke, I had a bloody nose, I was sick and furious. It was just after first sunset, and the kids were squealing around the ecologerium. Then one little girl I didn't even recognize ran up to me and jerked my arm.
Da, oh, Da, come look. The Annie Warts are
I pushed
just
her, and
to...
she sat down, surprised on the sand. I just wanted to get to the water and splash something cold on my face, because every minute or so it would start to burn. Another bunch of kids grabbed me and tried to pull me over. First, I took two steps with them. Then I just swung my arms out. I didn't make a sound, but I put my head down and barreled against the plastic wall. Kids screamed. Aluminum snapped. The plastic cracked and went down. My boots were still on, and I kicked and kicked at red earth and sand. Shade palms went down, and the leaves tore under my feet. Crystal branches broke like glass rods beneath a piece of plastic. A swarm of lizards buzzed up around my head. Some of the red was Sigma. Some was what burned behind my face. I remember I was still shaking and watching water run out of the broken lake over the sand, then soak in so that the wet tongue of sand expanded a little, raised just a trifle around the edge. Then I looked up to see the kids coming back down the beach, crying, shouting, afraid and clustered around Antony's ma. She walked steadily toward me, steady because she was a woman and they were children, but I saw the same fear in her face. Antony was on her shoulder. Other grown-ups were coming behind her. Antony's ma was a biologist, and I think she had suggested the ecologerium to the kids in the first place. When she looked up from the rune I'd made, I knew I'd broken something of hers, too. An odd expression got caught in the features of her. I remember it, oh, so beautiful face, with compassion alongside the anger, contempt alongside the fear.
Oh, for pity's sake, Vime, won't you ever grow up?
I opened my mouth. But everything I wanted to say was too big and stayed wedged in my throat.
Grow up?
Antony reached for a lizard that buzzed his head.
Everything stop growing up now.
He looked down again at the wreck I'd made.
All broken. Everything get out.
He didn't mean to break it.
Then she knifed the gratitude I felt toward her with a look.
We'll put it back together.
She put Antony on the sand and picked up one of the walls. After they got started, they let me help. A lot of the plants were broken, and only the Annie Warts who'd completed metamorphosis could be saved. The flying lizards were too curious to get far away, so they netted them and got them back. I guess I didn't help that much, and I wouldn't say I was sorry. They got just about everything back except the sloths. We couldn't find them at all. We searched a long time, too. The sun was down, so they should have been all right. They can't negotiate the sand with any speed, so couldn't have reached the jungle. But there were no tracks. No, nothing. We even dug in the sand to see if they'd buried themselves. Never did find them, though. It wasn't till more than a dozen years later I discovered where they went. For the present, I accepted Antony's mildly adequate statement.
They just must have got out again.
Not too long after that, I left the procreation group. Went off to work one day, didn't come back. But like I said to Antony, you either grow or die. I didn't die. Once I considered returning, but there was another war, and suddenly there wasn't anything left to return to. Some of the group got out alive. Antony and his mob didn't. I mean, there wasn't even any water left on that planet. When I finally came to the star pit myself, I hadn't had a drink in years. But working there out on the galaxy's edge did something to me, something to the part that grows I'd once talked about on the beach with Antony. If it did it to me, it's not surprising it did it to Ratlet and the rest. and I remember a black-eyed creature pressed against the plastic wall, staring across impassable sands. Perhaps it was knowing that this is as far as you could go. Perhaps it was the Golden. Golden? I hadn't even joined the group yet when I first heard the word. I was 16 and a sophomore at Luna Vocational. I was born in a city called New York on a planet called Earth. Luna is its one satellite. You've heard of the system, I'm sure. That's where we all came from. A few other things about it are well known. Unless you're an anthropologist, though, I doubt you've ever been there. It's way the hell off the main trading routes and pretty primitive. I was a drive mechanics major, on scholarship, living in and studying hard. All morning in practical theory, a ridiculous name for a ridiculous class, I thought then, we'd spent putting together a model Keeler intergalactic drive. Throughout those dozens of helical inserts and super-inertia organic sensitives, I had been silently cursing my teacher, thinking about like everybody else in the class, so what if we can fly these jalopies from one galaxy to another? Nobody will ever be able to ride in them, not with the psychic and physiologic shells hanging around this cluster of the universe. Back in the dormitory, I was lying on my bed, scraping graphite lubricant from my nails with the end of my slide rule, and half reading at a folded back copy of The Young Mechanic, when I saw the article and the pictures. Through some freakish accident, two people had been discovered who didn't crack up at 20,000 light years off the galactic rim, who didn't die at 25,000. They were both psychological freaks with some incredible hormone imbalance in their systems. One was a little Oriental girl. The other was an older man, blonde and big bone, from a cold planet circling Cygnus Beta. Golden. They looked sullen as hell, both of them. Then there were more articles, more pictures, in the economic journals, the sociology student letters, the legal bulletins, as various fields began acknowledging the impact that the Golden and the sudden birth of intergalactic trade were having on them. The head of some commission summed it up with a statement.
Though interstellar travel has been with us for three centuries, intergalactic trade has been an impossibility, not because of mechanical limitations, but rather because of barriers that till now we have not even been able to define. Some psychic shock causes insanity in any human, or for that matter, any intelligent species or perceptual machine or computer that goes more than 20,000 light years from the galactic rim. Then complete physiological death as well as recording breakdown in computers that might replace human crews. Complex explanations have been offered, none completely satisfactory, but the base of the problem seems to be this. As the nature of space and time are relative to the concentration of matter in a given area of the continuum, the nature of reality itself operates by the same or similar laws. The averaged mass of all the stars in our galaxy controls the reality of our microsector of the universe. But as a ship leaves the galactic rim, reality breaks down and causes insanity and eventual death for any crew, even though certain mechanical laws, though not all, appear to remain for reasons we don't understand relatively constant. Save for a few barbaric experiments done with psychedelics at the dawn of spatial travel, we have not even developed a vocabulary that can deal with reality apart from its measurable physical expression. Yet just when we had to face the black limit of intergalactic space, bright resources glittered within. Some few of us, whose sense of reality has been shattered by infantile, childhood, or prenatal trauma, whose physiological and psychological orientation makes life in our interstellar society painful or impossible, not all, but a few of these golden...
At which point there was static or the gentleman cough.
Can make the crossing and return.
The name Golden, sans noun, stuck. Few was the understatement of the millennium. Slightly less than one human being in 34,000 is a Golden. A couple of people had pictures of emptying all mental institutions by just shaking them out over the galactic rim. Didn't work like that. The particular psychosis and endocrine setup was remarkably specialized. Still, back then, there was excitement, wonder, anticipation, hope, admiration in the word. Admiration for the ones who could get out.
Golden?
Ratlet was working as a grease monkey out here at the star pit over at Polachki's.
Born with the word. Grew up with it. Weren't no first time for me. Though I remember when I was about 6, right after the last of my parents had been killed, and I was hiding out with a bunch of other lice in a broke-open packing crate in an abandoned freight yard over near the ruins of Helios on Cretan 7. That's where I was born, I think. Most of the city had been starved out by then, but somebody was getting food to us. There was this old crookback character who was hiding, too. He used to sit on top of the packing crate and bang his heels on the aluminum slats and tell us stories about the stars. Had a couple of rags held with twists of wire for clothes, missing two fingers off one hand. He kept plucking the loose skin under his chin with those grimy talons. And he talked about them. So I asked, "Golden what, sir?" He leaned forward so that his face was like a mahogany bruise on the evening and croaked, "They've been out, I tell you, seen more than either you or I. Human and inhuman, kid boy, mothered by women and fathered by men still, they live by their own laws and walk their own ways."
Ratlet and I were sitting under a street lamp with our feet over the edge, where the fence had broken. His hair was like breathing flame in the wind, his single earring glittered. Star-flecked infinity dropped away below our boot soles, and the wind created by the stasis field that held our atmosphere down, we call it the whirlwind out here because it's never hot and never cold and like nothing on any world, whipped his black shirt back from his bony chest as we gazed on galactic night between our knees.
I guess that was back during the second Kyber War.
Kyber War? Which one was that?
I just know it was fought over possession of a couple of tons of Adialium. That's the polarized element the Golden brought back from Loop Galaxy. They used Yadna ships to fight it. That's why it was such a bad war. I mean worse than usual.
Yadna? That's a drive I don't know anything about.
Some Golden saw the plans for them in a civilization in Megalanic 9.
Oh, and what was Kyber?
It was a weapon, a sort of fungus the Golden brought back from some overrun planet on the rim of Andromeda. It's deadly. Only they were too stupid to bring back the antitoxin.
That's Golden for you.
Yeah. You ever notice that about Golden Vine? I mean, just the word. I found out all about it once from my publisher. It's somatically unsettling.
Really? So are they. Unsettling, I mean. I just finished a rough, rough day installing a rebuilt cure in a quantum transport hell that just wasn't big enough. The Golden, having the job done, stood over my shoulder the whole time, and every hour he'd come out with a sort of added instruction that would make the next 61 minutes miserable. But I did it. The Golden paid me in cash and without a word climbed into the lift, and 2 minutes later, while I was still washing the grease off, the damn 500-ton hulk began to whistle for takeoff. Sandy, a young fellow who'd come looking for a temporary mechanics job 3 months back but hadn't given me cause to fire him yet, barely had time to pull the big Waldos out of the way and go scooting into the shock chamber when the 300-meter doofus tore loose from the grapplers. And Sandy, who, like a lot of these youngsters drifting around from job to job, is usually sort of quiet and vague, got loud and specific.
2,000 pounds of non-shockproof equipment out there. Ruin it all if he could. I'm not expendable. I don't care what... These Golden...
The ship hove off where only the Golden go. I just flipped on the not open sign, left the rest of the grease where it was, left the hangar and hunted up Ratlet. So, there we were, under that street lamp, sitting on the edge in the whirlwind.
Golden. It would be much easier to take if it were grammatically connected to something. Golden ones, or golden people. Or even one gold, two golden.
Male golden, female goldina.
It's something like that. It's not an adjective and it's not a noun. My publisher told me that for a while it was written with a dash after it, and that it stood for whatever it might modify.
I remembered the dash. It was an uneasy joke, a feeling for that cough. Golden what? People had already started to feel uncomfortable. Then it went past joking and back to just golden.
Just think about that, Vime. Just golden, one, two, or three of them.
That's something to think about, kid boy. Ratlet had been six during the Kyber War. Square that and add it once again for my age now. Ratlet? Double six and add one. I like kids, and they like me. But that may be because my childhood left me a lot younger at 42 than I should be. Ratlet's had left him a lot older than any 13-year-old has a right to be.
No Golden took part in the war.
They never do. I watched his thin fingers get all tangled together. After two divorces, my mother ran off with a salesman and left me and four siblings with an alcoholic out for a year. Yeah, I still have divorces. Monogamous marriages and stuff like that where I was born. Like I say, it's pretty primitive. I left home at 15, made it through vocational school on my own, and learned enough about what makes things fly to end up, after that disastrous marriage I told you about earlier, with my own repair hangar on the star pit. Compared with Ratlet, I had a stable childhood. That's right, he lost the last parent he remembered when he was six. At seven, he was convicted of his first felony, after escaping from Cretan 7. But part of his treatment at hospital, come reform school, come prison, was to have the details lifted from his memory.
Did something to my head back there. That's why I could never learn to read, I think.
For the next couple of years, he ran away from one foster group after the other. When he was 11, some guy took him home from Play Planet, where he'd been existing under the boardwalk on discarded hot dogs, souvlaki, and falafel.
Fat, smoked, perfumed cigarettes. Name was Vivian?
Turned out to be the publisher. Ratliff stayed for 3 months, during which time he dictated a novel to Vivian.
Protecting my honor. Well, I had to do something to keep him busy.
The book sold a few hundred thousand copies as a precocious curiosity among many, but Ratliff had split. The next year, he was involved as a shill in some illegality I never understood. He didn't either.
But I bet I made a million, Vime. I earned at least a million.
It's possible. At 13, he still couldn't read or write, but his travels had gained him fair fluency in three languages. A couple of weeks ago, he'd wandered off a stellar tramp, dirty and broke, here at the Star Pit. And I'd gotten him a job as a grease monkey over at Palachki's.